All right, thank you, Fabian, and thank you, committee, for putting me on after the break, because after Antonio, we did need the break, so we got through that one, okay. I'm going to talk a little bit futuristic, and everybody else, Mingo got way back into the history, but we're going to step forward now, and we're going to ask, what is the future of soil testing, and where should we be looking for new ways and new parameters to be taking charge of the agriculture that's going to take place in the next 20 or 30 years coming here. I don't know if Turgog had that same vision back in the early time of what he was looking into the future, but let's us look at the future quite a bit. Now I'm going to give you my wish list up front. And the reason I do that, before people drop off or people walk out, I want them at least to get the salient points that I'm going to present this afternoon, talking about where I think that soil, water, and plant testing, I've kind of opened it up a little bit here, needs to be in the near future. First of all, the National or Regional Universal Soil Test. And that's something that everyone talks about. Doug went into some detail about the 15 or so soil tests that are available out there. If you're working for a national organization like I did with USDA, everyone wants to condense that down to the simplicity of one single test. So the single drop seawater test or whatever we can come up with as a test, I think, is where we want to be. Not only in the testing, but also in the proficiency. And I know we have worked with the North American Proficiency Testing Program, part of SSA, to help us show that we do have proficiency in our soil test labs, and that EPA, USGS, USDA looks to those as being laboratories that are providing the information we want to see with the proficiency levels we want to hear. Giving nutrient recommendations, I think we've talked about that, but we have so many soil test labs now, and we still have division of power within our land-grant universities, that once a lab receives a soil test, they are not sure where that soil test is going back to have the recommendations presented. Sometimes they push the button and say, these are the general recommendations of our lab or the general recommendations of this state. But I would guarantee that probably close to 50% of the soil tests now are done out of the state where the recommendations are being asked to present. That's a little problematic for us in USDA because we rely on the land-grant university of that state to give us our recommendation. So somehow we have to bring together the soil testing analysis with the recommendations, working with the land grants and extension to make sure that happens. Number three is adding soil health to our testing parameters. Ad nauseum, we've talked about nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, pH, but now people are concerned about other things. And we're going to talk about some of these soil health parameters we would like to see our analysis and testing laboratories present us for information. Measuring soil carbon, measuring soil organic matter, of course, farmers, producers are looking for money-making projects and doing this. They have to verify, validate their soil test levels of carbon. We're going to have to find some methodology that we can bring these soil test carbon on a real-time basis and over a trend analysis, what that's going to do. Predicting nutrient supplying powers of soil organic matter and amendments. Well, you know, I should have been doing this, I guess. Whoops, I go back. We're now looking at a point that we know how much material is in the soil, and we kind of know how much material is in the plant. But the big question the producers are asking is, how much is that going to become in my subsequent crop? How much material of the soil and how much material of that crop residue or that green manure crop is going to add to my fertility and nutrition of my subsequent crop coming up next year? And we'd like to see soil testing laboratories be a little more proficient in looking at how soil tests relate to supplying power of nutrients in previous years. Notice I also said plants and water, because irrigation water and cover crops and the like crop residue are part of that soil nutrient supplying power. Also using water, plant, soil for analysis for environmental indicators. I thought Doug did a good job on that. That's real. It's happening right now. So I think laboratories and soil testing programs take that responsibility upon themselves. And then I'm glad Dave mentioned this about measuring soil properties, chemical, physical, and biological and directly in the field. That's how we started out. And now we went back to the laboratory and we had to have precise sample sizes and we had to sample and package everything correctly. A lot of people now don't want to wait for that analysis. They want on-the-go, instantaneous type of information. So this is my wish list. This is where I think that soil testing, water testing, and plant testing will be in the near future. And I think this is something we have to work for. Now, you're going to say, oh, Jerry, you're asking us to do too much. We can't do all that. We're a simple soil lab. Well, yeah, but Truog, I'm sure, started out with simple equipment, simple things. Now we've expanded and got sophisticated in our electronics and computers. We can do some of these things. So let's think about this as a future, that we need to be looking at these on-the-go and in-the-field testings that may in fact eliminate the soil laboratory as part of the analysis process. It may be something that would be done directly in the field. Now we in USDA NRCS have what we call a conservation practice standard. We have this for nutrient management, and these are the things that our standard is asking our producers, our people that are writing conservation plans to have, provide. A plan has to supply nutrients. I mean, without supplying nutrients to the crop, the plan kind of falls apart because the producer would be unhappy. It has to properly utilize those organic byproducts and materials that are coming, manures, sludges in particular. But also now we have stuff like cover crops, crop residues coming out, and we have to look at that. Minimize agriculture non-point sources. That's one of the objectives of USDA and nutrient management, is to reduce or trying to minimize the amount of materials that are leaving the application site and going on to other places where it's not as well needed and wanted by the environment. Protect air quality. Uh-oh. That means the laboratories now are going to have to start looking at air monitoring devices. But air quality is part of the new thrust in the nitrous oxides and ammonia, sulfates, those types of things. And it's part of our nutrient management standard that we apply nutrients so not to add extra emissions to the air that could cause deleterious effects later on. And to maintain and improve the physical, chemical, and biological conditions of the soil. So these are purposes of our standard, pretty encompassing, pretty big. And we expect our producers to have some basis, some help in trying to formulate these ideas so they can carry out a nutrient management plan on their property that they're farming. When it comes to soil testing, our nutrient management planning is writing about 14 million acres of conservation nutrient management plans per year. That's the record for the last 4 or 5 years that many acres are being planned. And about 9 million acres of that is being applied every year. So, Paul, if we do the math, 9 million new acres of land that's coming into conservation planning and nutrient management, that's about 500,000 new soil tests that should be coming in to our laboratories. Most land-grant universities and most NRCS plans are saying that soil testing has to be an integral part of the nutrient management plan. So there's a progression of this taking on. I think, Paul, your last estimate there was about 50 million acres under nutrient management planning. I mean, under soil testing, so this shows about a 10% increase every year can be expected. If the plans are being followed and if the cooperators are working in toward their completing their plan, that's going to happen. There's potential for about a 500,000 of plans, and the way we test this and the way we gather samples, there's a whole new industry out there of consultants, certified crop advisors, private individuals that are looking to do this type of collection of things, but it's going to be an additional workload. So instead of us all going nuts about all this new stuff, let's kind of look futuristically. We have the four rights, the right rate, the right form, the right timing, and the right method of application has been a stalwart of conservation nutrient management planning for many years. And thanks to the promotion by, like, the International Plant Nutrient Institute, this is going to continue as be the stalwart of where we're going as far as nutrient management planning goes. How does the laboratories and soil testing fit into this? The right rate? We're asking some simple questions, such as how much is contained in that soil, how much is contained in that plant, how much will be released by this year's crop, how much additional will be required, there's the recommendation part, and how much will be left over at the end of the year. So a soil test is not only a static thing, but it's kind of projecting into the future, and it's kind of looking at things on a continuum out there, what's going to happen. So rates are important, the form, which forms are the best to supply the nutrients, which forms will be left over. Is it all going to convert over? Is it all going to stay on the soil colloids? Is it going to be an organic or inorganic form? And which forms are most vulnerable to losses? In some cases, the ammonical form, some cases, the nitrate form, some cases, the soluble P. So we're looking for some assistance in trying to determine these types of questions about the form and the material timing. What's the best time to put the stuff on? What's the best time to recover it? And does timing affect the loss potential? I think so. I think the time we put it on is very important based on all the environmental impacts that take place. The timing of the product is good. Again, we need to know that information. And the method of application, does placement really matter? Well, Dave Franson said, you don't know, stratification may be good, stratification may not be. I think Doug pointed out clearly, though, that if runoff and erosion is taking place only in that top 2 inches, then the position of that nutrient or added organic material is important, and it should be looked at. And we need to understand that. How good is good enough? All right, so here's my list. For those of you who missed it the last time, we're not going to go over it. This is the last time you're going to see it. But this, Ann, is what I think that USDA is looking forward to as far as where the future of soil, water, and plant testing is going to be. All right, let's go to the universal phosphorus extraction. Someplace in the world, everyone is looking that we can squeeze the globe, get that extraction of that soil, it's going to come out and it's going to say, whoops, it's going to say phosphorus at the end. Well, I've been told this, and people have clearly pointed it out, yeah, when pigs swim, that's going to happen. Land-grant universities are provincial in some ways. They have testing programs that date back 110 years, and they're not going to allow their particular testing extraction program to go. It's not only extraction chemistry. We found out it's number of scoops, it's a number of shakes, it's the DI water type that's different throughout the land grants. So somewhere in the future, the universal future of things, we've got to work toward a program that has some at least regional universality to it, that we can say that across these state lines or across this region, this is what we expect from a soil test program. Charlie, you look like you're doubting we can do that in Alabama. We can. We can. We will.
When you come up with a uniform soil across the whole United States.
When pigs swim. when pigs swim. Exactly. So let's look at recommendations. Now, I stated that about 50% of our soil tests come, or soil test analysis is done outside the state from which it originates. That means these recommendations are coming in many forms and many shapes. It's not like confusing the producer, but it's confusing us in USDA to know exactly where the status of that soil is. Did they use Malic? 1, 3? Did they shake 7 hours? Did they go 24? That type of stuff, as Doug said, all has a reflection on the amount of material that you're going to find on the end. Let's look at soil quality issues. Now, there's many things we used to think was that kind of fuzzy, warm feeling about soils that no one really wanted to attack, but really, soil quality is one of the hot topics right now of how to get your nutrients in more available forms for the plants to use them, and how to keep your soils from eroding, and how to keep more water infiltrating into them. So let's look at just some simple soil quality issues. pH and nutrient content, very easy to go. Quantity and quality of soil organic matter. They not only want to know about the carbon that you're looking at, but they want to know about the activation of that carbon, the recalcitrant of that carbon. Is it new residue or is it old residue? And a lot of the carbon models that are coming out are asking that very question. Is that carbon that you have from carbonates? Is that carbon that you have from corn stalks? Is it coming from soybeans? So we have to figure that out, and we have to report that back to the people that want to understand about the dynamics of carbon out there. The presence of soil contaminants, probably nothing new, but soil quality people are very interested. Heavy metals, toxins, pesticides, stuff like that are coming in. And we've been doing that for years. Maybe not in the same laboratory. Maybe the pesticide laboratory is a completely separate unit from the nutrient laboratory, from the physical parameter laboratory, so we may not be doing this at the same thing, but at least the report should come out as one report to tell people about it. The presence of soil beneficials. We've talked about bad things, but what about some of the good things? The lignin, the glomalin, the carbon, the microorganisms. Does any lab here do nematodes? I mean, that's an entomology lab, right, that does nematodes. But nematodes seem to be a part of the active biological system that people want more ideas in. Ray, I wish you could raise nematodes in Nebraska, or you could have a nematode soil testing program and add it to the list, yeah. And the physical attributes, water stability, aggregates, bulk density, particle size. These are questions that soil quality people have in their mind that create a good quality soil. I think Cornell University has done a fair job putting together a little soil health test report, and they talk about those things, about aggregate stability, about water holding capacity. On the bottom, they've even stooped down to talk about pH. So it's all part of that soil quality issue. But they're coming up with a ranking score based on all these soil parameters. Now, it's about as wild and far-fetched idea as the phosphorus index was 15 years ago, but this thing is going to mature, and I think you're going to see more of this soil health type of testing that people are wanting to see. Glomalin, have we seen it? Do we have a test for it? Can we find it in the soil? Sure, there's ways to do it. Are our labs ready to do this on a routine basis? Maybe, maybe not. It's going to be something new. And what about water-stable aggregates, usually done in the field? Is there a way we can transport material into the laboratory and do water-stable aggregates in the laboratory as well as doing it out in the field? Or should this be a test that we say is going to be strictly done in the field? How about soil carbon? Now look at this, guys, gals. The carbon dioxide cycle is very simple. You have oxide in the soil, goes into the plants, goes in the roots. Why do we need this multi $1,000 apparatus to measure that simple process. People are asking, yes, carbon dioxide is so ubiquitous, why do we need the equipment to do so? Is there another way we can measure carbon in the soil? Is there a quick way, an instant way to do it? Well, I dare say in the future in our soil quality and soil testing, we'll need this. Carbon wants to be traded. Carbon wants to be added to your pesticide absorption credits. Carbon wants to be added to your nutrient supplying power credits. And unless we know the information about soil carbon, we're not going to be able to answer some of these questions. And contaminants, we probably got a good handle on contaminants. We could probably do all this stuff, heavy metals. There may be some things like nutraceuticals or foodborne pathogens we haven't delved into lately. Or maybe another of our colleagues have delved into it, but it's something I think the public wants to see in the testing program. The nutrient supplying power, this has come on big in the last 5 or 6 years with the advent of cover crops. We raise cover crops. We know cover crops absorb nutrients from the soil. How quickly does that nutrient go back into the soil and become labile for plants? Such things as legumes, which the nitrogen is a big component, or some things just like grasses where just carbon and phosphorus and potassium are important to know. So what is the supplying power? Not only the soil, but when you add the soil with the plant residues, what is that supplying power we have there? Okay. This is situations we run into the field. Here's a field composting. The farmer has a field. He's decided to put his compost pit right there. He comes in and says, I need to know an analysis of my compost material because I'm going to apply it to my field. I don't know what the soil test of my field is, and I don't know what the soil test of the compost is, but I want to meld the two together. Help me out. Well, you look at the field and say, that's easy. We'll just go plug some cores, take it out, put it in. And we look at the compost and we said, okay, let's take a little closer look. Well, the compost not only has compost, but it has tree bark. It has pieces of wood. If I'm not mistaken, that's a rock. So right away, the laboratory is saying, geez, that's going to take our Wiley mill and grind it up. We can't do that. So how do we overcome this situation? We're going to have to try hard to do so. So environmental indicators, I think Doug's done a good job of saying where the soil test P is and what the relative crop yield is. We've had that for years. We've even come up with what we call thresholds, and those thresholds have been published. And the infamous Iowa Phosphorus Index, which Antonio had a big part of. So the direct field analysis, I think this is where we started 100 years ago. We have a soil test kit. If you don't believe me, look at this. We have phosphorus and we have nitrogen. So what more do we need in our soil testing? That's the big two. All right. So these are the things that are changing. We're probably going to have a higher volume of soils. If we keep increasing about 10% a year, the laboratories are going to get more and more. And I'm not sure the trend of the laboratory. Where's Keith? Keith Reed. Is the number of laboratories increasing or decreasing throughout the country? We're getting less or more?
Less over time.
I know our land grants are going down, but the privates are popping up. So we're going to need a higher volume because the nutrient management plan had more intense sampling. We're just taking more cores. We have to quantify new things like organic materials and contaminants and beneficials. And the field level and on-the-go testing, that's what the producer wants. They sit in that cab of that tractor and they want to do it all. They don't even want to step down and take a soil sample. They want it right from the seat of their tractor. They want this information. So we're going to have to do that. And state-specific analysis and recommendations have to follow USDA guidelines and programs because that's what we trust as our guidance for putting nutrients together. So, Fabian, with that, I've thrown the challenge out twice. If they didn't catch it, I'll be available later on to repeat the lesson to you. Thank you.
Thank you.